We're going to start off our show today by getting an update on Venezuela. The New York Times is reporting that in Venezuela, the opposition to the Maduro government has been weakened. The Guardian reporting that the opposition is splintered. And there were two major victories at the polls by the Maduro government. First, the success in electing the newly formed Constituent Assembly. There was fierce opposition to that election for the Constituent Assembly, with threats from the United States as well as other Western nations. But people turned out in droves and voted. And that was followed by regional elections and, again, massive victory by the Maduro government. Although the opposition, it was predicted, was set to win comfortably because of what they said, public anger, according to Reuters, over food and medicine shortages and soaring inflation. Nevertheless, the government took 18 of 23 governments. But results in the state of Bolivar are being questioned, and there are reports of legitimate concerns about the result in that state. But even if they were legitimate issues in the election of governing Bolivar state, they are not sufficient to throw off the clear victory by the Maduro government. Now, Enrique Capriles, an opposition leader who twice ran for president of Venezuela, has threatened to break with the broad alliance of opposition parties, this on Tuesday, furthering the crisis of the opposition. And furthermore, there were hopes by some who oppose the Maduro government that Venezuela's oil company, PDVSA, would default on a key debt payment, which would have threatened Citgo, which is Venezuela-owned and based in the United States. But thanks to a loan from Russia, it is reported, Citgo has been able to pay its debt. This after President Maduro made a recent visit to Moscow. So what's going on in Venezuela? Is Chavismo back on the rise? Did it ever go away and weakened? What about the economic crisis, including food shortages and more? How is corruption being tackled? What is the reality on the ground? What, if any, regional support is the Maduro government receiving? Before we welcome our guest, Carlos Ron, let us hear a clip from CNBC and how they describe what happened with Venezuela's oil company avoiding what is described as a catastrophic debt.
Here's the story. You see this bond that we're showing you here. This had a payment of nearly $1 billion due today. What's significant about this bond in particular is that it's collateralized against Citgo, which is the U.S. refining subsidiary of Venezuela's oil company, PDVSA. And if they hadn't paid it, there's no grace period. The bondholders who control 51% of Citgo in the case of a default, literally, Venezuela could have lost control of their crown jewel. This thing is so important. What's super important, add to that, they've collateralized the other 49% to Russia's Rosneft. Somebody who's seen that paperwork says that there's a cross default in there. In other words, if Venezuela had failed to pay the bondholders today, Russia's Rosneft could have said, well, we want the 49% of Citgo that's owed to us. That would have set up a crazy situation where the U.S. government and CFIUS were never going to allow Rosneft to control U.S. refineries. The cash flow situation in the country, you can tell just from the video that comes on the ground, is just terrible. But 20 minutes ago, they sent out a press release saying they had transferred the money. So they appear to have dodged a bullet. And look how that yield has, like, dropped just in the last, you know, we're looking at 6 months here.
Only 18.
Yeah, it's only at 18%, right? A big improvement from where it was.
And this is an important discussion because Venezuela has the world's largest supplies of crude oil in the world. And some say that's a blessing. Some say it's a curse. Well, here to discuss with us and give us a sense of what's really going on in Venezuela from his perspective, I'd like to welcome Carlos Ron. He is the chargé d'affaires at the Embassy of the Bolivarian Republic of Venezuela in the United States in Washington, D.C. Carlos Ron, welcome.
Thank you very much. Great to be here.
Okay. So, Carlos Ron, people who live in the United States, as well as throughout Europe, actually, are fed on a regular basis that Venezuela is a dictatorship, that the economy is in shambles, and the majority of the people just want to leave. And then blaming much of what is happening, not only on the present government, Maduro, but the former beloved president of Venezuela, the late Hugo Chavez. So, so there's a lot there that we have to uncover and see what's true, what is not true. Now, given the recent election victories, some people are saying that Chavismo or the socialism, the form of socialism implemented by President Hugo Chavez, is back on the rise. Is that the case? Did it ever really go away?
I think that what's been the one of the greatest achievements in the last 18 years in Venezuela has been a profound commitment of the population towards deepening democracy. And in Chavismo and the Bolivarian Revolution, if anything, it's a very democratic and participatory movement. And what you see in the last couple of months, you know, if we think about the two elections, the elections for the Constituent Assembly at the end of July and the recent elections on for governors, is, again, you know, the Venezuelan people committed to this process of, you know, deepening participation and deepening democracy. I have conviction that, you know, it is through elections, through participation, that we solve our problems, and not and specifically a great rejection to all the sorts of political violence that had been promoted before then by the opposition, both internal and from outside.
Right. Now, the, you know, it's interesting that you hear again and again and again that Venezuela either is a dictatorship or moving swiftly towards a dictatorship. I know I have visited Venezuela and actually have been an observer in some of the elections in Venezuela, not the recent elections. This was during when President Hugo Chavez was still alive. But tell us a bit about the voting process in Venezuela and why that charge is likely not the case, but also what is the situation in Bolivar State, where Gulf News, for example, is reporting that because the system of Venezuela, a voting system, is so good that the opposition actually can find out through an audit whether or not there was fraud in the state of Bolivar. Any update on that?
Well, several things there. First of all, I think that and you know, because you've seen it yourself, you know, the voting system of Venezuela is electronic. It's one of the most advanced voting systems in the region, probably, you know, in the world. And because they make sure that your fingerprint activates the voting machine, so that it can tell that a person can only vote once. I mean, it will lock itself if anybody tries to attempt to vote again. You have a receipt of your vote so that you can match it later to the electronic count that the computer gives at the end of the voting session. And you can match the paper trail with the computer results. So there's several things that could sort of help make sure that the results match what was voted for. In the case of Bolivar recently, something that's it's interesting is that their claims of fraud. Yet I have yet to see the official procedure that usually takes place when there are, you know, some disputes, which happens in any electoral system. I mean, there's always room for, some sort of contention. You have mechanisms where you go present your proofs or whatever your allegations are. That is studied, obviously, and then, that's what decisions are made if there will be any irregularities. And that has just to happen. And but at the same time, you see these political actors taking to the media and to social also social media to try to stir up this idea of fraud. And again, this idea of fraud, it's always been there since 18 years ago, just because what the victory of a popular movement means is, an alternative, and an alternative to neoliberal policies, an alternative to, or an independent position from the United States or European powers. So usually this is something that the corporate media and some special interests are always going to criticize and sort of sow this idea that there would be fraud. If you look at the statements, for example, of State Department right before the elections, during the last, 20 elections or so that we've had, they always questioned, right before the election process, they always questioned the possibility that there might be fraud. And then right after the election took place, then they, reassert that they thought there was some fraud, yet the Venezuelan people are happy and content with all the audits that take place. I mean, one of the interesting things about the Venezuelan system, you usually have systems around the world that will do a 4-5% audit of their results. Venezuela, at least, the very least, does 54% in every election. And even for this one that just passed, the president, President Maduro, who, was in a winning position because of the Socialist Party won most of the governorships, the president himself asked for a 100% audit of the system.
So an audit will be going on in Bolivar State?
Yeah, the whole election is going to be audited.
Okay, right. So then, thanks for updating us on that. Nevertheless, we are seeing a situation now, when President Hugo Chavez was elected president, much of the shock, I think, shockwaves around the world in his first election. That was followed by a whole slew of elections of left-leaning presidents in the region, including in Venezuela, in Argentina, Nicaragua and Bolivia, etc. And we are seeing a shift now in that and undermining of those governments or, charges of corruption, etc., as happened with Lula's Workers' Party in Brazil. So given, and we know that the Organization of American States, for the most part, really totes the line from the United States and, its Western allies, although they failed in a recent attempt to a vote against Venezuela because there was strong opposition by countries in the Caribbean region, by some of the CARICOM nations. So tell us a bit about the support that Venezuela still has, the Maduro government in the region.
Well, there's several countries that have voiced their support for Venezuela. I mean, they're very strongly. I mean, Bolivia has been one, and Nicaragua as well, and obviously Cuba. We have a strong relationship of cooperation, solidarity between our countries. And the Caribbean, as you said, has been vital because the Caribbean, as a group, as CARICOM countries, has maintained a strong position of, not letting themselves be pushed by Almagro's political agenda, his anti-Venezuelan agenda, but rather, taking a very prudent position in support for, the Venezuelan people. So I think, there's a strong support in the region, despite the fact that there are other countries where, like you said before, for different reasons, right-wing governments have been able to take control. I mean, the example of Brazil that you just gave was not only the fact that there were charges of corruption against some of the Workers' Party members, but actually there was an orchestrated, literally a coup d'etat against President Dilma Rousseff, yeah, where you had, a group of members overthrow, a group of Congress members overthrow the will of 54 million people who voted her in. So these are the ways that the right wing have sort of found to regain some positions. But we got to be careful. We got to be look about what's going to happen next year, because next year there's a new election cycle in an important election cycle in Latin America, where you'll have elections in Colombia, Mexico, Brazil, Venezuela, and there's going to be certainly a expression of the popular movement in there that will be important.
Right. And our guest is our Carlos Ron. He is the chargé d'affaires at the Embassy of the Bolivarian Republic of Venezuela in the United States. And he's based in Washington, D.C. And Carlos Ron, I was also reading an article that there is some attempts to strengthen the bilateral relations also with the Netherlands and with the Dutch Kingdom. There's been joint exercises in the Caribbean Sea between Venezuela and the Netherlands. So we'll see where that goes. But the other thing that we hear quite a lot about in Venezuela has to do with the economic crisis, the food shortages, the strength of the black market, people fleeing, you know, across the border into Colombia, etc. Now, I do recall when President Hugo Chavez, during the time that he was president, there was after the failed coup against him, orchestrated and supported by the U.S. and by the CIA, there were several attempts to undermine the economy of Venezuela, including going after the oil sector, PDVSA, I think at the time it was called a oil coup, to really undermine Venezuela economically. And there are some analysts that are saying the present economic crisis, which you could tell us a bit about, also has to do with the over-reliance on the oil sector, you know, for the programs for the poor, et cetera, in the U.S., but also in Venezuela, but also supporting some impoverished people in the United States and the Caribbean region, you know, et cetera. And that with the fall, in a way, of the pricing in the oil sector, that that had a devastating impact on Venezuela. And I'll have to say, I was a little suspicious when the Saudis led the effort in lowering the price of oil, because I immediately thought, well, that is also going after Venezuela on a certain level. But tell us your view on this economic crisis, the reasons for it, and how, despite the economic crisis and shortages of food on the shelves, et cetera, Chavismo still got through and the Maduro government won in both of these recent elections.
Well, you know, one of the things that I think is important to, like you said before, definitely Venezuela does have a great dependency on oil. You know, it's something that, you know, we've been basically oil producers for over 100 years, and that definitely has an impact once if prices fall. I mean, you got to remember that before the revolution began in 1999, effectively, you know, there was a large amount of Venezuelan population that was excluded from, you know, not only from political participation, but also from reaping any of the benefits of the oil economy. And when one of the shifts that President Chavez did, and that was very important, was starting to channel the money that was coming in from the oil into social programs. And that's how we got rid of literacy. That's how we, you know, were able to make to bring Cuban doctors in and you know, in inner city communities and rural communities for the first time had access to medicine and so forth. You know, and this the let's say the debt that we had as a nation to our majority of our population was starting to be covered during these years, and that's at the same time that, you know, prices were going up. So once the price falls, however, you know, there's something that has taken place over the last 3 or 4 years. We didn't have enough time to, you know, shift the model to another type of economy that wasn't just dependent on oil or wasn't so dependent on oil.
Yeah.
And it's something that has definitely been attempted, but it's not something that, you know, you can accomplish in, you know, 10 years, 15 years. It's a difficult task. And so, you know, so it is true that that has allowed for us to, you know, to face some, certainly some difficulties. But besides that, and like you mentioned before, there has always been an interest by part of the opposition, by special interest groups in Venezuela, to sabotage, you know, a socialist government and try to, you know, peak shortages. These are selective shortages, by the way. I mean, these are things that items that you would that you know would hurt the population in specifically. I mean, we're talking about you know, flour or corn, you know, corn flour or something that at one point in time would run out, and that would be part of everyday, you know, Venezuelan meal. But it would be just that for a specific moment in time. So you sort of feel that it was something meant to frustrate the population. Now, at the same time that all this has been going on, and, you know, the revolution has also been very important in raising consciousness of the people in Venezuela, so that people are able to see what's going on and are able to, you know, distinguish between sabotage and between, you know, and try to move forward. I mean, and place to avoid this sort of sabotage and still support a government that has provided for, you know, more democratic rights and more social welfare.
Right. So tell us, you know, I know we are going to have to wrap up very shortly, but just about some of, because we hear nothing on the mainstream media here about any achievements whatsoever, you know, of the Maduro government or in Venezuela. And perhaps you could tell us a bit about that, because clearly something is going on, because people did go out to vote. By the way, I always take a look at photos and videos of the opposition, and knowing Venezuela a little bit also, and the racism against people of African descent and brown-skinned people, indigenous people. A lot of the opposition protests I see are very, very white, I'll have to say. But it does seem as though the people, despite the shortages, despite all the efforts against them, are really holding on to their Bolivarian revolution. Tell us why you think that is, and some of the achievements, and then, you know, we'll have to wrap things up.
Sure.
Yeah.
So I'll be sure, and I'll tell you two specific examples that I think will make your the point that you're suggesting. First of all, one of the things that made people come out and vote and you know, express themselves for in favor of Chavismo, as you say, is exactly rejection to the opposition violence. The violence in the opposition was strong for, you know, since April until July, and, you know, calling for protests on the street, but not just, you know, peaceful protests, but actually violent protests that were trashing, you know, buildings and you know, placing barricades and all these things. And as you say, you know, one of the, I think the most, what left most marks on Venezuelans was the fact that during that period, over 20 Venezuelans, Afro-Venezuelans, as you say, were targeted because of the color of the skin, and they were actually set on fire, you know, by these violent groups. You know, some of them lost their lives, but literally they were actually, you know, lit on fire. And because they looked Chavista, because, you know, associated Chavista with being a darker skin. So, you know, that viciousness was obviously rejected by most of the population who, you know, wanted to express themselves through the vote. So that's one of the reasons that I think, you know, we must take into account. The other thing that is important is the rejection also to international pressures, such as not only with the OAS, the way you mentioned before, but also, you know, from the Trump administration placing sanctions on Venezuela. You know, one of the difficulties that we have now economically is precisely because of sanctions that are being implemented against Venezuela, you know, not allowing us to renegotiate debt and that sort of thing. But when we talk about achievements, and even despite the fact that there's been all these difficulties, President Maduro, for example, has kept social investment at the very high, during around 70% of the GDP. And one of the things, for example, to give one example precise on housing, we had a deficit of 3 million homes in 2012, and the housing program that began by President Chavez, but has continued and has expanded during President Maduro, has already provided 1.7 million of those 3 million that were missing. And these are, homes that are dignified homes that are, given to the public and to the people, that the families that need them. And you can see, the Venezuelan opposition tried to privatize once they came into the National Assembly. They tried to privatize these homes, arguing that, people should make the decision to do whatever they want with their property. But actually what they were trying to do was, throw these million or so homes into the real estate market and benefit, certain interests.
Yeah.
When the government actually made them, family property, so you could, you make sure that the families are the ones that can maintain that benefit.
Right. Well,
that's one of the key achievements that you could probably, look at, despite all the difficulties that we've had.
Right, right. And we also know that extreme poverty, definitely dropped in Venezuela. Well, I'm afraid we are out of time, but we did get to talk about how the Maduro government is tackling corruption. Perhaps next time round. I do know, though, that everywhere, particularly in the global south, that corruption and buying people off is very much a tactic used by U.S. and other intelligence agencies to undermine governments. And I imagine some of that is also going on in Venezuela. Clearly, that's not to say that they're just not some people that are just greedy and taking advantage of the situation. But Carlos Ron, chargé d'affaires at the Embassy of the Bolivarian Republic of Venezuela in the United States. We know that you're really busy, so we appreciate you taking the time to spend with us today. Thank you.
Thank you very much.